Blog Talk Radio.
When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth a separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light, transient causes, and accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having a direct object, the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained, and when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing, with manly firmness, his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise. The state, remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose, obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migration thither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. For quartering large bodies of troops among us. For protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states. For cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. For imposing taxes on us without our consent. For depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury. For transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses. For abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies. For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments. For suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous of ages and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country and to become the executioners of their friends and brethren or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We've reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right, ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states they have the full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
James Bostic here, a conservative's perspective on the Patriot Nation radio network here at Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com. Look here for the Patriot Nation radio network or at any of the links that we have liberally sprinkled out amongst the worldwide web of intrigue and danger. A happy Independence Day to all of you. I love it when I get to do shows on our days, you know, our national holidays, days of significance. We're not even not necessarily that June 6th, D-Day, or Pearl Harbor Day, or VJ Day, or again, today, Independence Day, Veterans Day, Memorial Day. Any date, you know, that is of real, you know, seminal significance to the country. And today is the day. Absolutely the day. I hope you enjoyed it. That was something I put together a couple years ago. And I want to compare and contrast some things. And we're going to start with this. 56 men from each of the original 13 colonies signed the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, 1776. Nine of the signers were immigrants. Two were brothers. Two were cousins. One was an orphan. The average age of a signer of the Declaration was 45 years old. Benjamin Franklin was the oldest delegate at 70. The youngest was Thomas Lynch, Jr. of South Carolina at 27. 18 of the signers were merchants or businessmen. 14 were farmers. 4 were doctors. 22 were lawyers, although William Hooper of North Carolina was disbarred when he spoke out against the king. And 9 were judges. Stephen Hopkins had been governor of Rhode Island. 42 signers had served in their colonial legislatures. John Witherspoon of New Jersey was the only active clergyman to attend. Almost all of them were Protestants. Charles Carroll of Maryland was the lone Roman Catholic. Seven of the signers were educated at Harvard, four at Yale, four at William and Mary, three at Princeton. Witherspoon was the president of Princeton, and George Wythe was a professor at William and Mary. His students included Declaration scribe Thomas Jefferson. 17 of the signers fought in the American Revolution. Thomas Nelson was a colonel in the 2nd Virginia Regiment and then commanded Virginia military forces at the Battle of Yorktown. William Whipple served with the New Hampshire militia and was a commanding officer in the decisive Saratoga campaign. Oliver Wolcott led the Connecticut regiments sent for the defense of New York and commanded a brigade of militia that took part in the defeat of General Burgoyne. Caesar Rodney was a major general in the Delaware militia. John Hancock held the same rank in the Massachusetts militia. The British captured five signers during the war. Edward Rutledge, Thomas Hayward, Arthur Middleton were captured at the Battle of Charleston in 1780. George Walton was wounded and captured at the Battle of Savannah. Richard Stockton of New Jersey never recovered from his incarceration at the hands of British loyalists, and he died in 1781. Thomas McKeon of Delaware wrote John Adams that he was hunted like a fox by the enemy, compelled to remove my family five times in a few months. Abraham Clark of New Jersey had two of his sons captured by the British during the war. 11 signers had their homes and property destroyed. Francis Lewis's New York home was razed, his wife taken prisoner. She died in captivity. John Hart's farm and mills were destroyed when the British invaded New Jersey, and he died while fleeing capture. Carter Braxton and Carter Nelson, both in Virginia, lent large sums of their personal fortunes to support the war effort, but were never repaid. 15 of the signers participated in their state's constitutional conventions, and 6, Roger Sherman, Robert Morris, Franklin, George Clymer, James Wilson, and George Reed, all signed the U.S. Constitution. After the Revolution, 13 signers went on to become governors, 18 served in their state legislatures, 16 became federal judges, 7 became members of the U.S. House of Representatives, 6 became United States senators. James Wilson and Samuel Chase became Supreme Court justices. Jefferson, Adams, and Elbridge Gerry each became a vice president. Adams and Jefferson later became president. 5 signers played major roles in the establishment of colleges and universities. Franklin and the University of Pennsylvania, Jefferson, University of Virginia, Benjamin Rush and Dickinson College, Lewis Morris and New York University, and George Walton and the University of Georgia. Adams, Jefferson, and Carroll were the longest surviving signers. Adams and Jefferson both died on July 4th, 1826, the 50th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. Carroll, the last signer to die in 1832 at the age of 95. Lawyers, farmers, educators, men of means, men of substance. When the time came to stand up and do what needed to be done, they did not waver. They did not flinch. They did not put masks on and attack the law-abiding citizenry. They did not force violence on the citizenry. I wonder how many lawyers we have in Antifa. I wonder how many true men of academia we have in Antifa. Doctors, judges, political leaders. No. It just made me think, really. Because what Antifa and Occupy Wall Street and Black Lives Matter and any of the other militant arms, and we're not gonna because these cats, like I said in the teaser, all these cats are buzzkills, and we're not gonna dwell on them in so much as we use them as a reminder of us to those things which are good and true and kind and real in this country. Not Antifa, obviously. These guys laid it on the line. Their lives, their fortunes, their sacred honor. And, you know, during the time of the revolution, it was no different than it is now. If there had been polling, or such as it was, I suppose, maybe about 25% of the nation, about 25% of all the people who lived in the colonies were fundamentally in favor of independence through revolutionary means if necessary. That's it. But that 25% had the courage of their convictions. They held to themselves, they held to their standards, and they held to their vision of what they wanted for this country. And they claimed it. Independence Day, man. I dig it. And that is no joke. I straight up dig it. This is a great day. I've got all kind of stuff lined up here, and I'm scrolling through it all now. And coming up next, this is another great one. We do have some bad things to talk about. Like I said, not too much. But you see the contrasts? Now, I'm not questioning Antifa's commitment level. You know, they're committed to chaos. They're committed to violence. They're committed to disrupting the status quo. Look what they're doing out in Portland, Oregon. They are basically the police force. The cops are told routinely, stand down, don't do anything to Antifa, let them do whatever they want. And what did they do? They took a crowbar to some old guy and bashed his head. Same thing with some journalist who got beat up, I think, and I'm not sure about this, to the point where he suffered some form of brain damage. Now, people, really? This is okay? Democrats are okay with this? And they are, because they defend it. You see it all the time on the news. They defend it. But enough about them. It's time for us to get back to the country.
You ask me why I love her? Well, give me time. I'll explain. Have you seen a Kansas sunset or an Arizona rain? Have you drifted on a bayou down Louisiana way? Have you watched the cold fog drifting over San Francisco Bay? Have you heard a Bob White calling in the Carolina Pines? Or heard the bellow of a diesel in the Appalachia Mines? the call of the Niagara thrill you when you hear her waters roar? Look with awe and wonder at her Massachusetts shore, where men who braved a hard new world first stepped on Plymouth Rock. Do you think of them when you stroll along a New York City dock? Have you seen a snowflake drifting in the Rockies way up high? Have you seen the sun come blazing down from a bright Nevada sky? You hail to the Columbia as you rush into the sea, or are you headed Gettysburg, or struggle to be free? Have you seen the mighty Pecan, who watched an eagle soar? Have you seen the Mississippi roll along Missouri's shore? Have you felt a chill at Michigan when on a winter's day her waters rage along the shore in thunderous display? Does the word aloha make you warm? Do you stare in disbelief when you see the surf come roaring in at Waianae Reef? From Alaska's cold to the Everglades, from the Rio Grande to Maine, my heart cries out, my pulse runs fast, the mice for domain. You ask me why I love her? I've a million reasons why. My beautiful America, beneath God's wide, wide sky.
The stirring opening words of the Constitution proclaim that it is the work of we the people. In the Declaration of Independence, the American people had announced to the world that they were sovereign and free. In the Constitution, they sought to defend this freedom by creating a unique government for an exceptional nation, a government that derived its just powers from the consent of its people. In this American Republic, what is the role of the people? Well, the United States is exceptional because of its universal founding principles. At the heart of these principles is the belief that people are free by nature and possess inherent rights. The use each of us makes of these rights will naturally be different. And the outcomes of those choices will naturally differ too. But the choice remains ours. Freedom is thus inextricably bound up with living our lives as we see fit. This is self-government in the truest sense of the term. We the people need not slavishly defer to experts. We can be trusted to govern ourselves. That's why the government must remain limited. The people have given it only limited powers, as described in the Constitution. When government takes more than we've given it, it renders our choices meaningless. At worst, unlimited government is tyrannical. At best, it imposes a dull uniformity that crushes true diversity and saps the independent spirit of the people. The founders believed that a crucial problem was to avoid creating a government that could be dominated by a single faction. That faction might be a minority, it might even be a majority, but no matter its size, it would inevitably seek to promote its own narrow interests at the expense of the liberties of the people. One purpose of the Constitution's checks and balances, one reason why it divides and limits powers, is to restrain the ambition of the powerful, and in the words of the Constitution, to ensure that government genuinely promotes the general welfare. As the government has grown over the past century, the business of government has increasingly become taking from Paul to benefit Peter and then borrowing from Peter to pay off Paul. What the supporters of big government call the general welfare is merely the artful distribution of favors to particular factions. The federal government is not supposed to be the most important institution in America. In securing the general welfare, it is supposed to do only those things that are provided for in the Constitution. It must, for example, provide for the common defense and regulate our relations with foreign nations. It must respect our right to enjoy the fruits of our labor by taxing lightly and defend the freedom of the marketplace by ensuring the rule of law. And it must remember that the family and religion are where we learn virtue, and that without virtue, government cannot be both limited and free. Not dead air, just getting a drink. As John Adams stated, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. In the United States, government requires not merely the consent of the governed. It rests ultimately on the ability of the people to govern themselves. The first role, the first duty of the people is to ensure that they remain virtuous and free. That's why the American system is based on the rights of the individual, but not on individualism. When Thomas Jefferson wrote in his notes on the state of Virginia that it is the manners and the spirit of a people which preserve a republican vigor, he captured a vital truth of American freedom. The founders placed great hopes in the Constitution, but they knew that no paper constraints would preserve liberty. That duty rested ultimately with the American people. The role of the Constitution was to restrain and to check, and as Washington wrote, to raise a standard to which the wise and honest can repair. The words of the Declaration, the lives of our founders, and the design of the Constitution can inspire, but on their own, they cannot preserve the American Republic. Only the American people, steeped in the principles that inspired the founders and animated the Declaration, can do that. And America's virtues don't simply appear out of thin air. They're not the result of individuals living in isolation. They're social virtues. They're nurtured in families, sustained in religious congregations, and fostered in the everyday interactions of work, hobbies, and life. Long before the Declaration, foreign observers were surprised by the number and the vigor of America's social institutions and by the everyday democracy of American marriage, work, and society. Far more than any other nation in the world, Americans recognized each other as social and thus political equals. That's why the traditional American virtue of self-reliance is so vital and why the growth of government is so dangerous. Self-reliance means that we have an obligation to try not to impose financially on our equals. Big government does not see citizens who provide for themselves and help their fellows. It sees subjects whom it must tax and on whom it must spend. The wish of the founders was not for us to live as isolated individuals, nor was it to insulate government from religion and civil society. On the contrary, it was to insulate religion and civil society from the government, to prevent government from weakening and corrupting it. The founders believed that if the sources of civic virtue remained free and strong, the American people would remain capable of self-government. There is no magic in the American people that can save them if they do not save themselves. That's why Ronald Reagan said in his famous speech on the evil empire of the Soviet Union that freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. As Americans, we have always an obligation to pass the inheritance of freedom on. We pass it on unimpaired to the next generation. That's the second duty of the people. Today, everyone says they're in favor of civil society, but not everyone understands what that means. When the left speaks of civil society, it often implies that it sees civil society as the government's agent, paid by the government to do the work that the government has not yet taken over. In the realm of diplomacy, civil society is a code word for self-nominated left-wing organizations that claim to speak for the people of the world and assert a moral authority greater than democratically elected governments. In the world abroad, the United States needs to stand up for the legitimacy of sovereign democracies, because sovereign democracies are the only governments that allow genuine civil society to flourish. At home, Americans should not be taken in by the argument that civil society needs to be directed by the state in order to do good works. That's just another subterfuge that weakens civil society. It conceals the hand of big government and ultimately impoverishes us all, both spiritually and financially. This subterfuge rests on the deep contempt that the left has entertained for civil society since the 1960s, when it came to the conclusion that the job of the government was to liberate us from our oppressive private lives. Churches, charities, institutions are all part of civil society and all can do good work. But you know what? Our bowling leagues, our scout troops, our farm stands are equally part of civil society. Just because an institution is social does not mean that it is everyone's business. On the contrary, the power of civil society stems from the fact that so much of it is personal, not intended to remedy any broader problem. Government must be built on respect for the virtues that this civil society fosters, or it'll ultimately destroy civil society. The lesson of history from Europe is that as their governments have expanded, their charities, their churches, their social institutions have shriveled. Friends, the United States is an island of stability in a world of turmoil. We have the same Constitution today that we had over 200 years ago. Our concern to protect America from its enemies abroad and to promote American leadership in the world must never cause us to forget that our power to lead flows from our unique combination of a powerful but limited government with a dynamic and self-reliant society. When we see others abroad that share that vision and who are struggling against tyranny, we should give them our friendship. When we see a tyranny fall, we should applaud cautiously, knowing that democracy is created from the bottom up, not the top down. Our role in the world flows from what makes us exceptional, to defend and promote the universal principles on which the American people founded their government. That's why the true role of the people is to ensure that both they and their government stay faithful to those principles. It's partly a job for the free press and the ballot box, but we will not be able to speak and vote in support of America's founding principles if we forget what those principles are? In his great farewell address from the Oval Office on January 11, 1989, Ronald Reagan called on the nation to foster informed patriotism. Reagan believed that after the end of the Cold War, the spirit of patriotism was in the air. And he thought that wasn't good enough. For Reagan, patriotism had to be well-grounded in popular culture and to recognize always that America is freedom, and freedom is special and rare. American freedom began with the American memory. And if that was not preserved, Reagan warned, the ultimate result would be the erosion of the American spirit. We must understand our Constitution if we are to defend what we have achieved under it. And we must know our history if we're to value the ordered liberty the founders bequeathed to us. We must be free by governing ourselves, preserve our freedom for the next generation, and stand up for freedom at home and abroad. We, the people, created this republic. We, the people. Only we, the people, can preserve it. We'll be back with more after this.
Race and ethnicity have defined every nation on Earth, except one, the United States of America. It is defined by values. So to understand America, you have to understand American values. They are 1. E pluribus unum, 2. Liberty, 3. In God we trust. I call this the American Trinity. I made up the name, but I didn't make up the values. They are on every American coin. The first, E pluribus unum, is Latin, meaning out of many, one. When first adopted as an American motto, shortly after the American founding in 1776, it referred to the 13 American colonies becoming one nation. Over time, however, most Americans understood the motto to mean one people from many backgrounds. To quote the E Pluribus Unum Project, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities, over the years, E Pluribus Unum has also served as a reminder of America's bold attempt to make one unified nation of people from many different backgrounds and beliefs. In other words, America doesn't care about your national or ethnic origins. This explains why people who immigrate to America assimilate faster and more fully than immigrants to any other country. Most of those who have immigrated to Europe from, for example, Turkey, as millions have, are not considered fully German by fellow Germans or fully Swedish by fellow Swedes or fully Spanish by fellow Spaniards. This is even true of the children and grandchildren of those immigrants. And just as important, few of those immigrants or their children or grandchildren will ever feel fully German, Swedish, or Spanish. But a Turk who immigrates to the United States will be regarded as fully American as any other American, the moment he or she becomes a citizen. And they, and certainly their children, will feel fully American. Of course, America has not always lived up to this E pluribus unum ideal, but the ideal was always there, and it was applied to virtually every immigrant to America. The second component of the American Trinity is liberty. Now you might ask, didn't the French Revolution also enshrine liberty as a central national value? Wasn't its motto liberty, equality, fraternity? The answer is yes. America is hardly the only country to enshrine liberty. It is the only country to enshrine liberty, e pluribus unum, and in God we trust. What's the difference? The difference is this. The moment you affirm equality, as the French Revolution did, you will lose liberty. It is a basic American value that all human beings are born equal and all must be equal before the law. But ending up equal, that's a French and European value. And if you want people to end up equal, you must deprive them of liberty, which is exactly what happened right after the French Revolution and in every other society that made equality its national goal. America gives people the liberty to end up wherever their abilities, work ethic, and luck take them, meaning unequal. Therefore, professional athletes will make more money than teachers or doctors. That may be unfortunate, but that is what liberty allows. If you want equality, you will tell people how much they can earn, and that means the end of liberty. And third, in God we trust. Unlike almost every other country, America never had a state religion. But it was founded on the principle that God, specifically the God of the Bible, is the source of moral values. As the Declaration of Independence put it, all people are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. In other words, rights come from God, not from men. If rights are given by men, men can take them away. The American Trinity is the reason America became the world's freest and most prosperous country. But many Americans want to, in the words of former President Barack Obama, fundamentally transform it. They wish to replace American values with European values. Equality of result and an ever-expanding state, which greatly reduce individual freedom. The celebration of ethnic and racial identity, which is the opposite of E pluribus unum, and the removal of God as the source of morality and rights. Which set of values Americans adopt will determine whether America remains free, prosperous, and the force for good in the world that it has been. With the exception of the Civil War, this is the greatest internal battle in American history. I'm Dennis Prager.
Mind. I wanna move my shoes and see what I can find. I wanna stand up tall and open up my eyes. I wanna reach out my hand until I touch in the sky. I was a poor lost lamb in a deep dark hole, but now I found that lightning storm saved my soul. I used to drink, I used to smoke, I used to smoke, drink. And dance a hoochie coo. I used to smoke and drink and dance a hoochie coo. Oh, oh, yeah. When I'm standing on this corner, praying for me and you. Ha, ha, ha. That's why I'm saved. I'm saved.
I'm saved.
People, let me tell you about a kingdom come. You know I'm saved.
I'm saved.
I'm saved.
I'm saved.
Well, I can preach until you're deaf and dumb. I'm in that soul saving army. Beating on that big bass drum. I used to cuss. I used to fuss. I used to fuss. Fuss. Boogie all night long. I used to cuss and fuss and cuss and fuss and cuss and fuss and boogie all night long. Ha ha ha. But now I'm standing on this corner. I know right from wrong. Ha ha ha. Why I'm saved. Several people speak. Oh, yeah. Now I'm stepping on the glory. Salvation is my feet. Because I'm saved.
I'm saved.
I'm saved.
I'm saved.
People, let me tell you about a kingdom come. I am saved.
I'm saved.
I'm saved. Well, I can preach until you're deaf and dumb. I'm in that soul saving army. Even on that big face drop. Oh, oh, yeah.
Get an amen. Ah, that was a little bit for the atheists and the Jesus and the Democrats, because they had to smack down on the atheists too. And let me say this, Democrats, seriously, all kidding aside, and I know there's probably not too many of you guys listening to it, so maybe those of you who are listening tonight, and if you're not, check it out in the archive, because this is the 4th of July, and probably nobody listening at all, but that's okay. You can check it out in the archive. If you've got, let's do this. All you cats on social media, you have Democrat friends, you have left-wing friends, you see them post their venom against the president, against pro-life people, against me and you every single day. Go to their pages. Go to their Facebook pages. Go to their Instagram accounts. Go wherever they're at. Go to their Twitter. See what they posted about the 4th of July. If they posted anything at all, because I have seen very little. And yes, these people, I look at them and I consider them my friends. I mean, some of them go back junior high school, college. I'm not exactly sure sometimes that they look at me as their friend based on well, based on a conservative perspective. But I do see them as my friends. I don't necessarily see them as bad people. I think sometimes I got some wrong ideas about stuff. But anyway, I digress. Democrats, seriously, especially Democrats like Schumer and Pelosi and the Schiff Head and Jerry the Jowls and all those guys, listen. And if you know them, if anybody out there listening knows these people, you can tell them I said it. You guys need you some Jesus. I'm serious. You really do need Jesus. Now, I'm not somebody to preach, and that's not what I'm doing. I'm not testifying. I'm not preaching. I'm not doing any of that. But as we are on the subject of the country, and it is Independence Day, and we take a moment to pause and reflect on those tenets of American belief, as we just heard Dennis Prager talking about the American Trinity. Simple fact of the matter is, and it is undeniable to anyone, I don't care what their argument is or what Howard Zinn kind of horse manure they're going to throw at you, this nation was founded on Judeo-Christian tenets, on Judeo-Christian interpretations, perspectives, if you will, of ethics and morality. It is based upon the Torah and the Bible. Now, Nancy Pelosi sees herself as a good Catholic. Nancy Pelosi also sees herself as being cool with aborting a baby after it's born. Now, again, not testifying, not preaching. You know what? We're going long. We're going long tonight. Mark is doing his anniversary show tomorrow night, by the way. Mark Hoffman will be on tomorrow night. 6 years is an anniversary show for Mark. He and I have been doing it for five. I was trying to do the math on it, and he and I have been working together for 5 years now. First, it was a Friday night show originally, and we were back-to-back, and then things happened. For some reason, we moved to Thursdays, but Mark will be on tomorrow night doing his thing from I guess his place. I guess he's back in Florida now, he'll be back on the air after a hiatus taking care of his father's estate up in Florida, up in New York, and we're glad to have him back. But tomorrow night will be Mark. You and I, and I use Nancy Pelosi as an example, but we could use Chuck Schumer. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, he probably sees himself as a good Jew. I don't know. But he's also cool with aborting babies after they're born. I don't think that's something that Jesus digs. I think Jesus probably rejects that doctrine. And I think Jesus would probably go, no, when addressing these people concerning their piety and their faith. I'm not really worried about the atheists getting Jesus so much, because they're only they're just self-insistent. They, you know, they're kind of like vegetarians. They make sure, you know, everybody knows they're vegans, and I don't care. Why are you doing that? It's like people that take a week to leave Facebook because they're posting everywhere all the reasons why they're going, and then what? 6 weeks, they're back. So I don't really care about too much about the atheists having Jesus, but I do very much care and am critically concerned about Jesus getting in the Democrat Party. You know, they booted him out in the convention before last, when I think it was in Miami or Los Angeles, wherever they were. And that little bantam rooster, Luis Gutierrez from California, three times delegates at the convention rejected Jesus, keeping God as part of their platform. They rejected it. They think they don't need Jesus. Oh. It has been my experience that is usually when he is needed the most is when people think they're cool, they're good to go, and they don't need him. And Nancy Pelosi and those guys, like I said, they're good to go with children being killed moments after their birth. They're cool with guys pretending to be women and going into bathrooms to pee with other girls and taking showers. They're cool with all this. They're good to go with all this. They're good to go with the Antifa violence that we see. They're good to go with honor killings and female genital mutilation and pederasty and pedophilia from Muslims. They're cool with all that. Yeah, think about that for a minute. Nancy Pelosi's good with that. All those cats that are running for president, they're good with that too. Every single one of them. Every one of those 2,416 Democrat presidential candidates that are running, every one of them is good with all those things I just talked about, all those terrible things, those abominations. They're cool with it. They are advocates of it. They wish to further it. Think about that. Unreal. I'm sure by now everybody's, you know, we've seen the brouhaha about Nike and their chief executive officer, Colin Kaepernick. And it's 4th of July. And this 4th of July in particular, we have to take a look at patriotism and why it is worth defending. For the haters, this day in particular, but pretty much ever since Donald Trump became president, it's open season on the American ideal. Colin Kaepernick doesn't like today's American flag because it reminds him of police brutality, and he doesn't like Betsy Ross's old school flag because it reminds him of slavery. I'm starting to think maybe Colin Kaepernick isn't it's not so much that he's not fond of the flag, but more of the country that made him rich. So Nike supports him by withdrawing the Betsy Ross flagged sneaker that they were going to make. That's right. You heard me. The American flag, apparently in any form now, is a toxic symbol. Meanwhile, at the Charlottesville City Council, Charlottesville, Virginia, home to Thomas Jefferson, just voted to stop celebrating his birthday. The city where he died on the 50th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence that he wrote. American patriotism has just reached a record low entirely because of Democrats, of whom, and this is why I want you to go check your friends' pages, only 22% of Democrats surveyed say that they're extremely proud of their country. To celebrate the 4th of July, America's most prominent newspaper is bidding for the Trolling Hall of Fame by running a video titled, "Please Stop Telling Me America is Great," and it just argues how America is just okay. You remember the distant past back there in 2016 when the leading voices of progressivism were saying, America never stopped being great and America is already great. Well, all that's over. American military and economic and cultural power dominates the world. You've never heard of the biggest movie made by China or France this year, but I'll bet they've heard of Avengers Endgame. America leads the world in Nobel laureates, and it isn't even close. America leads the world in the success of our middle class, and that's not even close. Yes, America has more poor people than some other countries, but that's because we let in millions of people from poor countries. Saying America has a poverty problem is like saying Florida has a high death rate. Florida doesn't kill people, but it just attracts a lot of old ones. What about slavery? It's not an irrelevant question to ask about American history. Slavery is indeed our original sin. It's important. We fought a war over it. You may have heard about it. But to think of slavery first, when you think of American history, is like thinking of Charles Manson first when you think of men. America accomplished a few good things as well. America is a radical idea that had never come close to being implemented before. A broad-based democracy with government engineered for the purpose of zealously protecting our natural or God-given rights. We zoomed out ahead of the rest of the world, and we never looked back. As late as 1870, only 40% of the men in Britain were entitled to vote. Voting in America wasn't universal until women got the vote in 1920, but the U.S. was miles ahead of everyone else in allowing its people to be heard. Even more important, the U.S. was and is miles ahead when it comes to allowing its people to speak. In Britain, people can and do get thrown in jail for things they've said on Twitter. Their 2003 Communications Act makes it a crime to type mean things on the internet. No, you don't get a break for being young or drunk or for thinking that you're being darkly funny. Police actually monitor their social media looking for people to arrest. A 2014 headline in The Guardian UK reads, "Is it right to jail someone for being offensive on Facebook or Twitter?" No, it isn't right. It is, in fact, quite wrong, and in America, it should be unthinkable because we have the world's strongest protections for speech while they last. The First Amendment, like everything else about America, has not always worked perfectly. Woodrow Wilson threw Eugene Debs in jail under the Sedition Act for opposing the First World War. But it is a great and noble idea, and we are far closer to living up to its full potential now than we ever have been in the glorious history of this exceptionally wonderful country. But don't take it from me. Ask the world. A Gallup survey notes that 150 million people, one out of every 25 adults on the planet, would move to America if they could. That's more than the next four countries combined. Everybody knows America is number one, which is why even among the hating class of Americans, no one ever leaves. You notice that? Ta-Nehisi Coates, Spike Lee still haven't moved to France. Gavin Newsom isn't moving to Mexico. Colin Kaepernick's not moving to Cuba. Lena Dunham, Bryan Cranston, Barbara Streisand, all those celebrities who threatened or promised to move are still here. Hell, we can't even get rid of the Canadian-born whiners and haters like Seth Rogen and Jim Carrey. They won't even move back. America did not complete the project of freedom on that broiling day in Philadelphia. But that's like saying your first day of school for your kid is no big deal because he can't do algebra yet. On July 4, 1776, we began setting up the greatest opportunity for human flourishing the world has ever known. And our example continues to be the world's beacon. The United States is not perfect, but we are the best. CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN. Flat out refused to cover the 4th of July celebration and all the events that were taking place in the Capitol today. Just not going to cover it. Not even going to talk about it. Like it did not happen. You know, somebody pointed out earlier, you know, they're dogging on Betsy Ross and the flag, and it's just bothering me. Take a look at this, folks. Seriously. What do we, and the question is, and I'm going to wrap this up in about 5-10 minutes here. The question is this. What do we do? You've got, just like I said, go to your friends' pages. See what they've posted. To celebrate, you know, how are they celebrating Independence Day? First off, I hope everybody had a great Independence Day. I hope you had the dogs. I hope you had the burgers. I hope you had the chicken. I saw a plate Mark fixed, which was looking awesome. He had it all. Burgers, dogs, chicken, macaroni salad. Who knows what else was lurking outside the range of the camera there for that picture. I hope you had a great day. I think that those folks who sacrificed through time given and labor, you know, in the military service were the ultimate sacrifice. I think they would want you to do this. I think they would want you to have the fireworks. They'd want you to see the parades. I'll tell you something else. They probably would not mind at all if some tanks or some military personnel carriers came down Pennsylvania Avenue in a parade. I bet it wouldn't bother them a bit. It doesn't bother me, and I'm sure it doesn't bother any of you. I think they would want you to have these things, these perquisites, these little bennies that we set aside for this day, for the weekend. You know, I'm glad to see that it's kind of spilled over into about a 2 or 3 day event. I really am. And I think that what makes it even more awesome is if we always stay mindful of the sacrifices of those folks who brought us here, who made this possible. Not Sam's Club, not the Oscar Mayer Corporation, not the Hormel Chili people, although they play their role and we're grateful to have them. I'm talking about the other folks that made it possible for all, you know, for us to fellowship. No, we're not a perfect country. We're not. We've made some pretty serious mistakes along the way. And we learned from them for the most part, and we have moved on. But we are the best country. Absolutely. Positively. No question about that. None. You know, I was gonna play it, but I'm not going to because it's just, like I said, most of the Democrats on days like this, on Veterans Day, on Memorial Day, Independence Day, they probably don't even know Lincoln and Washington's birthdays, and it doesn't matter. They would just be downers, but they're always buzzkills when it comes to national holidays. Check out your friends. Don't condemn them. Don't, you know, don't get on or anything like that or start a fight or anything. That's not what I mean. But just look. Like I said in that survey said, 20% of Democrats surveyed said they were proud of their country. Extremely proud. Only 22%. Why is that? Well, a lot of reasons for it. We know a lot of it. I mean, look at CNN, look at ABC, look at CBS News, look at NBC News, look at MSNBC, look at Headline News, look at the New York Times, look at the Los Angeles Times, look at your local papers. You know, they're told over and over and over by this cabal of left-wing, progressive, Marxist, communist bastards. Sorry, I don't think you can say communist on the radio. But anyway, you get the idea. That have told them, the New York Times, the paper of record, the old gray lady, runs a video on their website. Ah, America's just okay. They were never that great. Andy Cuomo, governor of New York. America's never, it was never that great. The danger that these folks represent in positions of power, are unbelievable. Unbelievable. I know they fooled a lot of people, you know, we weren't paying a whole lot of attention, and they're there. And they lied, and they were this, and they were that, and they were all these things, and that's, and we're, you know, okay, they were. What do we do? Well, we got to vote them out, but how do we do that? We got to inform people. You got to take a look at, and it may take a long time, and you may have to tread very carefully around some of your friends on the left, because this climate makes it difficult for a lot of people on our side to speak, get that message. Nah, Gary, you guys are worth it, man. We'll find the way. Gary Benford, friend of the program, the visionary behind Nation Savers 2018. Just, we were talking about New York. I was talking about Andrew Cuomo. He says, leave New York alone. We're not worth it. Yeah, there's some of you up there worth it, Gary. We're not going to leave you behind, man. We're not going to leave you behind. We don't do that. But that's, you know, that's the thing we got to do. But it's an outreach. And it's, and in this time of violence on the left, calculated violence, it's a dangerous thing to do. Maybe not so dangerous amongst your friends, but just to talk to them. And you know what? You may lose some friends. I kind of have. I don't think it was because of me, but there's nothing I can do about it. It's just how it goes. But you're going to have to make that, you're going to have to make that outreach happen. You know what? I think we're done here. There's fireworks are going to be starting soon. People are probably going round two on the grill and getting stuff out of the refrigerator. And that's where I'm headed. I want to thank you guys for hanging with me as we go a little bit long tonight. ACP Heard Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here, Blog Talk Radio on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Also heard 4 p.m. Sunday Eastern Standard Time, Mojo 50 Radio, mojo50.com. That's where you go. The very best, the world's finest conservative libertarian talk radio right there, mojo50.com. That's all the time we've got. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you so much for joining in and listening tonight. God bless and protect America. We'll be back next Tuesday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. We'll see you guys then. Take care. That was fun.